Welcome to the Ice Lab Podcast. We are your hosts, Michael Marinaro and Trent Michaud.
We are going to take you deep into our labs, as well as many different high-performance professionals we've connected with on our journey as we strive for excellence. Welcome back to another episode of the Ice Lab Podcast. Michael, how's it going, dude?
It's going good. Just starting to pack up the bags, hitting a plane for Russia in 2-3 days. So making sure I don't forget anything. Got the checklist out and starting to get packed up. How about you?
Nice, man. I'm still not fully unpacked. I got my laundry done. I got most of the rest of the suitcase and the electronics and everything still laying in there, but might just leave them in there and got to repack in a couple weeks. So might just leave it there for now. But yeah, so before we get into it, we're going to give a quick shout out because right now the Warsaw Cup is going on. So congratulations to our Team Canada athletes who have already competed in their short program. And good luck to the ones in the free program, as well as our athletes in the, what is it, the International de France, I think it's called?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. So good luck for that. And then actually, when this is aired, they will all be done. Then it'll be good luck for you, Mr. Marinaro.
Then it will be my time. Yes. Big shout out to Gabby Dalemond throwing down a clean short program. It was nice to see. Hopefully she does that again tomorrow. Good luck tomorrow in the free program there, Gabby.
Awesome. So, Mike, who do we got today? Who's our next victim?
We got a very close family friend of mine. It's been about 15 years since we have spoke. Took a little Ice Lab podcast to get us back together again, but extremely close with his family, extremely close with his mother and father. He played golf for the University of Wayne State while obtaining his Bachelor's of Marketing degree. He coached for 3 or 4 different universities after playing himself. He won many, many championships, as well as a 2013 conference title. He is the winner of the Jane Strickland Award in 2014. And in 2015, he was the assistant coach of Team USA for the Palmer Cup. Please welcome our first, I think this is our first non-figure skating guest on the podcast. So golf coach and close friend, please welcome Chris Hill to the podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me. What a cool honor to be with two high-performing athletes. You know, I'm so proud of you, Michael. I mean, I've watched you grow up, you know, and I was really close with your brothers. You were a little bit too young when we were causing all the trouble in Sarnia, but it's really neat to cheer for you. You know, I'm in Austin, Texas, and, you know, I tell everyone about you and how hard you've worked. And I tell every team I've had, I've explained to your dedication and how many hours before school, after school, your training, your mental training, your nutrition. I mean, everything you've done to accomplish this is outstanding. And it's inspiring to me as a, you know, as a golf coach to watch your development.
Thank you. Thank you.
So, Chris, so you, obviously you were a golfer. So how did that work in Canada with the winters? Did you always end up going down south for that or?
Yeah. So growing up, like my dad was a basketball coach. You know, so I was always kind of into basketball, and I was I'm too short and too fat and too slow, so that you know, but it was one of those things where being in Texas, I really, really struggle with this, is that we don't transition sports like we do up in Canada. You know, it seems like it's really challenging to play 2 or 3 sports like we did growing up, you know, and you hear all this stuff about early specializing and how it's good and bad. And, you know, there's probably more bad than good for long-term development. And I'm down here in Texas where it's football year round. And then you kind of sprinkle in a little bit of baseball and you sprinkle in
maybe some golf. But growing up, it was, I enjoyed the change of seasons. It was, you know, I played a little volleyball in high school, and I mean, I was still banging balls. And but you have to get creative up there. I mean, you can play. I mean, look at the PGA Tour right now, Corey Connors, Mackenzie Hughes, David Hearn. I mean, they're doing great. I mean, obviously, Mike Weir's from our hometown, and, you know, but it's hard. You got to get creative, right? I mean, you got to hit some balls in the nets. You got to use your imagination, you know. But I was just having this chat with my 8-year-olds and 6-year-old are super talented little golfers. And they just, we were just watching golf before I hopped on this. And I'm like, I think I'm playing my best golf at 38 just because the clubs in my hands, 365 days a year, I have a golf club in my hand. You know, and I can't imagine, like, my 8-year-old's hitting shots that I can barely hit. And I'm, you know, and it's just so strange growing up in a different – raising kids in a different climate than what I grew up in. It's just so shocking.
Yeah, that's super interesting. I never would have thought about the split of seasons thing. Like, obviously, because we're used to changing seasons. You think that even without the change of weather, people would still be switching from soccer to hockey and all that. And obviously, it's different in Canada, where hockey is pretty much life for Canadians. Yeah. But that's interesting that would play such a role, actually.
That down here, you almost take the summer off. You know, it's just because it's too hot.
Yeah.
You know, where you're transitioning, you know, more soccer goes more. I mean, everything's just transitioned more towards this fall and spring. And we really don't have a winter, you know, just it's strange. I mean, because I always tell that, like, I talk about how my development in golf and coaching is like, you always take 3 months off, right? I mean, up north, you guys, you're kind of hanging out for a little bit. A lot of my college guys, they would hang it up a little bit in the summer just because it was so hot. I mean, they would go get a little bit of work in the morning, and then they would, you know, as soon as it hits 105, 106 degrees, I mean, you can't do anything. You know, and those guys, I mean, as it's 3 months, anywhere you go where there's 3 months of kind of, you know, extreme weather. But it's interesting. Even so, like, I'm in high school now, you know, and it is extremely hard to get, like, we push multi-sport athletes down here and push our school, but it's, parents want to push them into one sport way too early. You know, it's, I mean, I got my little guys in the two right now, you know, with a little bit of soccer at school, but I'll tell you that, I mean, on a side, it's strange being a parent now with talented little kids, because you feel like you're always behind if you play two sports. Like, every parent, like, has this, like, anxiety, like, oh, am I missing something? Am I behind? And as a coach, I'm like, no, you're not behind. Your kid needs to learn, you know, certain aspects from certain things. I mean,
yeah, but, it's, I
mean,
so,
baby, you guys are living this. I mean, you guys, at what age did you guys go be like, hey, this is it. This is where I'm going.
Trend a little longer than me. I played all school sports through to grade 9. Then I went solely into skating. But that multi-sport for any youngster is extremely, extremely important. I think every single superstar, I don't think there is an exception of any sport, all of the number one superstars were all multi-sport athletes when they were younger. And I think it's 100% of them, like, that big of a number were multi-sport athletes as kids.
Yeah, for myself, I played, I was still, because I moved to a training center for school for skating when I was 17 in my last semester of grade 12. So I played in grade 9, 10, 11. I went to OFSA for cross country and track and field and played badminton and was involved in all that stuff as well. But yeah, you're right, Mike. Like, we've talked about this before. Michael Jordan, baseball, basketball. LeBron James, football, basketball. Sidney Crosby, I think, was high level in some other sports as well besides hockey. So,
and I get into this debate with parents down here is, you know, like, well, it's just golf. I'm like, well, your body still needs to develop, you know. And I you need to learn to lose on a team. You need to learn to win on a team. You need to learn to get punched in the face.
Yep.
Right. At some point in your life in sports, you're going to get clocked. How do you respond after you get hit?
Yeah. Mike and I are just used to getting clocked by our 5 foot partners, just an elbow in the face while we throw them up in the air and try and catch them again.
Yeah. But I mean, it's just like, if I could share one thing with everyone, just keep your kids in sports as long as they can. You know, you share this with, I mean, Tiger Woods is an exception in golf. He played golf and golf only, but like Jordan Spieth, he played sports all the way till the 12th grade. I mean, he was playing basketball. You got to.
I think Rory McIlroy, he looks like he did other sports before golf. Like, I know he's one of the first, like, really big into fitness golfers. But obviously he had to be – he's developing other things before being specialized.
Yep. You know, and that's – and down here, it's – I mean, it's – just replace the word hockey with football, and that's kind of what it's like down here.
That's, you know, awesome. I mean –
There's high school football games where there's 14,000 people on a Friday night.
That's pretty insane.
It's just normal for high school football.
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, the state championships are so different down there, eh? Compared to like the OHAs here in Ontario for the exact same level of sport.
Yeah. I mean, high school, it's like the World Juniors. I mean, if the high school state championships, just like the World Juniors, to kind of relate it to you guys.
I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it's where the Cowboys play. I mean, they sell out the bottom level. I mean, it's just one. I mean, it's a circus.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So when you moved to the States, you moved to Wayne State. So while you were attending school there, did you always like how was it while you were playing and going to school? Because obviously that's you're competing at a high level still with golf, and you're trying to also compete at a high level in your own schooling. How did you deal with that?
As a college athlete, you're pampered, right? I mean, we have study halls and tutors, and they really do a good job of making sure you were, you know, catered to. But I mean, I struggled for a while. I mean, it was American. I'll never forget American history. I'm sitting in that class, and I'm just it was a freshman class, and I'm just my head spinning. And then we go, I remember it was, I went freshman, the next class had American history. Then I had to go to American government next. And I had it Monday mornings. And I just, every Monday, I would just, by lunchtime, I felt like I was useless. But no, it was good. I mean, I really enjoyed Wayne State. I mean, it probably helped me become like a coach I am today. But, you know, to do it over again, I mean, I wish I would have went down south where I could have a club in my hand all year round. But, yeah, I made some amazing relationships up there. And my first job out of college was working for Hank Haney, Tiger Woods' coach. And I wouldn't have had that connection if it wasn't for I worked at Country Club of Detroit, which is a real cool, exclusive club. When I was in college. So, I mean, it all kind of fell into it, you know, and I worked for Hank Haney, and I'm still really close with him. And it was the year where Tiger broke his leg is when, you know, I got to be around Hank Haney. And that's who I learned under. So I learned under the guy that was training Tiger when Tiger was in his heyday. And that was, I got to watch Tiger practice and watch him develop, and, you know, kind of just, it was neat watching him hit balls because he's so methodical. He'd hit one ball and then it'd literally be about 90 seconds to 2 minutes later. And he would come back and just like process the whole thing in his mind and wouldn't say a word. And then he would go back and hit the shot and he would correct it without anyone even saying it. I mean, it was just that whole other level of visualization, and mentally just was crazy. But, you know, college golf, I mean, it's up 4 years where you're traveling around the country, you know, all your travels, your coach is taking care of all the plans. I mean, all you have to do is show up and play golf. I mean, it's such a cool deal. You know, I wish every kid could have an opportunity to play some type of, you know, NCAA sport.
Yeah, the NCAA world is a lot different than in sports compared to university and college in Canada as an athlete.
Yeah. And that's why I wouldn't have left Canada if it was set up kind of the way it is. But, I mean, there's no athletic scholarships up there. You know, so you get – all of a sudden you're a Canadian kid from Southern Ontario, and all of a sudden you're getting a scholarship to play golf. I mean – pack up your bags and see you later.
Yep.
Well, you were playing and attending school. Was coaching always in the back of your mind? Did you know that was something you wanted to get into as a next step, next chapter while you were playing?
Yeah, I mean, my dad coached for, you know, his whole career being a teacher, and just kind of listening to that and being around on the sidelines. And then when I got to college, I had a coach who was a great coach, and he kind of let me design some practices, and I started liking it. And then I was kind of trying to keep the team going. But I really thought I didn't know what I was going to do. I thought I was going to caddy. You know, and I really, my coaching philosophy, when I get on the golf course, you know, and I'm coaching on the golf, you're basically a caddy. Except I'm caddying for five players instead of one. And I thought I was going to go to Florida and caddy in the winter and then come back and work somewhere in Michigan as a club pro. And then, you know, I kind of got lucky. I mean, I signed a deal with Nike right out of school, and the Nike rep was at that country club of Detroit. And that's how it all started. It's like Hank Haney just took over this academy. You know, they need some junior experience. And I threw my name in, and I mean, there's 3,000 people for, I think, two or three spots. I just kept going farther and farther in these interviews. And my last part of the interview was give Hank Haney a lesson. And I guess
you were good enough at teaching golf by that point, eh?
Yeah. I mean, whoops, I just pushed something on them. Am I still there?
You're still good.
You're good.
I guess. I mean, but that kind of set up. Then when I got to Hank Haney's place, the International Junior Golf Academy, these kids come from all over the world, and they pay a lot of money to go either train this. It's a boarding school. They're either trying to go and play college golf, or they're going to go turn pro. But there's no system in place to, you know, how to get them to the next level. So I started working with a couple of coaches about, hey, and we developed a curriculum, and I became the college golf placement director. You know, hey, we need to do A, B, and C in ninth grade. We need to do, you know, here's what we need to do. And then from there, when we had two really, really good players, or three really. We had Morgan Hoffman, who was on the PGA Tour, and he was number one junior in the United States. And then we had Shea Shea Fang, she was there, and she stole out on the LPGA. And I think she's number six or seven in the world right now. So every college coach in the country was calling our academy asking about these two players. And I became the middleman, and, you know, I'm like, well, maybe I should try this college coaching deal. You know, and school in Houston. I knew I wanted to live in California, Florida, or Texas, where all the golfers are. And there's a brand new Division I school, Houston Baptist. And, you know, I met the coach, and I became the first ever assistant there. And I'm like, I'll never forget flying into Houston for the first time. I thought it was just like the movies, where it's going to be tumbleweeds and flat and dust. And I remember the plane coming down. I'm like, man, there's trees here. I mean, this place is, this might be all right, you know. But coaching's a blast. I mean, I wouldn't trade the thing for the world. And I've had some weird turns in my career, but it's God working His plan somehow, you know, and just roll with the flow.
How important is continuous learning? Well, you're a coach. You've obviously been doing this for many, many years. Do you have a formula that you stick to from back then, or is continuous learning part of the process?
Oh, yeah. Every day I'm trying to figure this thing out. I mean, so, you know, now with golf teaching, you know, it's so scientific with there's a couple devices out there. One's called a TrackMan and one's called a GC Quad. And it they're two very expensive pieces of machinery. I'm actually my feet are resting on the one. And it analyzes the moment the club hits the ball and gives you every factor you can imagine: spin rate, attack angle, if the ball's tilted, if the axis of the ball is tilted. So it's really become scientific. And this is probably the last 10 years. It's really become, like, if you watch baseball now, TrackMan got into baseball last year, and they're talking about arm angles, launch angles, velocity, and that's all spun off of TrackMan Golf. So now with teaching golf, and this is where I've had some really cool bosses in college where they've been all into this continuous learning, understanding the geometry of golf, the golf swing. And before it was like, I mean, think about growing up and think about, you know, what stuff you just look and be like, well, do this. You know, now it's all science. You know, what do you guys use? Is there something like that where, you do watch a lot of video?
Yeah, we watch a lot of video, but we don't have anything that's like the same sort of thing like that, like measuring like angles or anything like that. We do have Dartfish that some coaches use, and you can use it to measure like time in the air. So that's like measuring your height and everything and that stuff, but it's not as popular, especially in pair skating for that. We normally just like analyze like ourselves from video with our coaches and stuff.
Yeah. It's just 90% slow motion and human eye.
Yeah. I mean, is there a market for some type of, you know, you put, I'm not even sure what you put, I mean, like magnetic, like some type of, you know, the 3D stuff where you would wear, I'm not sure what, I don't know what the word is. But
what's the thing that Craig was working on, Mike? Craig Button was working on some sort of software of something, I think.
Yeah, it's now owned by the NHL. The NHL owns it. Sport IQ or Logic, Sport Logic. And it's like 360 cameras all over the ice. There's like 200 cameras, and they're measuring more things than I can know about.
and that's where, like, I mean, that's you guys are perfect athletes, right? I mean, just you do what the coach tells you, and, right? And that's what I'm doing.
Try to be.
That's what I'm doing with the golf swings, right? I have 18 guys on my team, and I can fire through. You know, I gave all 18 of them a lesson in about an hour and a half, just strictly based on science. I mean, here's ABC, here's what the club's doing, here's the launch angle, here's how it's entering the dirt. You need to do this drill, come back in a week. Like, there's no guessing anymore, you know, and that's what, even if you watch golf on TV now, every one of these guys is carrying around this little box looking thing, and they set it down right beside where they hit the ball. And it gives them instant feedback. Here's exactly how far your ball's going. 83.2 yards. Boom. It's just crazy. It's nuts what's going on with golf instruction.
That's awesome. That's super cool, though.
Like,
a lot of sports are getting to more of the point where, like, technology and science is becoming a lot more relevant in it. But, like, some of the amateur sports still hasn't hit it. But it's pretty cool to see the advancements that's come in since – like exactly what you're saying, being able to tell you everything.
But it's also very dangerous. I mean, you have to have like that gut feeling still has to be there. Like, should I tell Trent this right now, or do I hold off a little bit?
Yeah. The coaching aspect of that part.
Cause I can ruin more players than I can help them. Yeah. If I have a kid that is not analytical and I start pumping numbers, you know, some kids just they don't do well by looking at their swing because they're so feel, you know. But I work very close with a golf psychologist down here, and this has been my whole key since 2013. And I met him. His name's John Weir, and he's a mental golf academy, and he's a mental golf caddy. And 2013, he reached out to me, and I met him. And this is my last, or this was. Yeah, I'm the second last year at University of Houston. University of Houston is like the Montreal Canadiens of college golf. But the all-time winning program. And he does an assessment with each player, and it's a form of the Myers-Briggs assessment.
Yeah.
And it's how is your brain hardwired? So and then it spits out, you know, here's your stress modes, here's your anxiety, and here's your cues to coach Michael and Trent back to their calm state. So, and I still use it. I mean, 7 years later, I talk to them weekly about what's going on in their brains, and how do I speak to kids? Like some kids, I mean, it's coaching every kid differently. You know, you can probably think when you're growing up playing with other sports, you're like, man, I really wish coach didn't say that right now. But, you know, and now I can, like, I know how to motivate Trent without motivating him. The one, so I coached a guy in the Masters, Byron Meth. You know, I'll give you this is a neat little story. So it's 2015, I'm out in California, University of Pacific, and he was 600 in the world, and he won the U.S. Pub Links Championship, moved to 39 in the world. And he was a great player. He's out there playing still. But he was kind of at that, like, plateau level of your development where we couldn't get him over the hump. And then his roommate averaged about 75 and had so much talent in the world, but couldn't get over the hump. And the old coach, you know, kind of just – he coached him the exact same. So these guys – and they're roommates, they're best friends, and they go through the assessment, and they're exact opposites. So I split them apart at practice. Byron started practicing in the morning, and SJ was in the afternoon. And the way their brain was wired was Byron was – everything was written down. Every minute of his day was planned. And he would complain that, you know, that no one was working as hard as he was, blah, 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 because it was the way he saw the world. Everything's super analytical. And then the other guy was laid back. He's from Hawaii, you know, and he would, when he got to work, he would put in the most intense hour and 15 minutes you've ever seen. But he would jack around for the first 45 minutes. So, right, these two would just go back and forth, arguing. Then all of a sudden, I split them apart, and they both had to write down on a note card every day what the practices were, right? And I would check them, and Byron's would be listed from 7 in the morning till 9 at night. You know, every minute was planned. And then the other guy would have two things planned. That's it. And it just, all of a sudden, we split them apart. I start speaking to them completely different. I developed two different practice plans. All of a sudden, Byron's in the Masters, and SJ's in, what was the All-Conference, and was he an All-American? I think he was a notable All-American. But it's amazing. So I've been with this guy since 2013. And every school I've been at, we've shattered records by just speaking to people completely different. Like when we go on the road, I set the rooms by how their brains are hardwired. You know, even at dinner, if I see two introverts sitting beside each other, I'll go sit in the middle of them and talk to them. You know, if I see two extroverts, you know, in have – the one introvert kind of locked up in a corner, I got to go save that kid. He doesn't want to talk, you know, but it's neat to see it. Like, and I know the system now, and, you know, I can tell the difference between anxiety and stress. And I know exactly what to say to coach him back. You know, I mean, that's kind of been the whole key.
That's pretty awesome. You know, you've obviously learned a lot of this from over the years of practice and everything and the science behind it, but you're doing a really good job bringing the science and the actual, like you said, gut feeling of coaching and the like smartness of coaching behind that together. I know Mike and I always joke that I'm pretty sure Allison knows us better than we know ourselves. Like could like literally tell us everything about ourselves and we wouldn't even know that. We're like, oh yeah, that's right. I do that all the time. Like,
I mean, how important, I mean, how much, you know, sports psych are you guys doing?
I do a lot of journaling, and I have a mental performance coach and work with him probably, it's a little bit around like scheduling wise, but probably once every 3 weeks to once a month, I touch base with him.
Yeah, it's more of a self-guided on and off kind of thing. But the mental game for golf and skating, I think it's it's very similar because there's no offense, defense. You're not playing against somebody else, just a solo sport. It's you in the field of play, and there's no other contributing factors other than your sole performance. Nobody else can step in and interfere with that. So there's a very close parallel between the two sports there.
Yeah. You know, how much in your, like, do you guys work on breathing?
Oh, yeah. A lot of breathing.
Right. And that's, Now, if you had told me 15 years ago that I'd be coaching and we'd be coaching college golf and I'm working on breathing, there's no way I'd ever believe you. Like, I'm gonna be coaching these amazing athletes and, you know, now very talented high school kids, and we're working on breathing. I mean, we need to do that stuff growing up. You know, maybe that's, but it's so important, right? Visualization and, you know, breathing.
Visualization is huge for myself. I know for most people, I think, but I definitely, visualization is a big part of my daily routine for myself, starting as soon as I get up and going when I'm laying in bed the night, like at night before I go to sleep, is I visualize a lot of things.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you guys do about, how do you train for self-talk?
It's 90% pre-planned. All this, we have like our 4-minute run through, and all of the thoughts throughout that 4-minute program are pre-planned thoughts. So there's no room for guess, no room for error. You're thinking what you plan to think. It's pre-written down at 2 minutes into the program. This is my thought, and there's no other way around it.
Yeah. That's the difference I've seen in college golf, is the elite of the elite. I mean, the way they speak to themselves and the way they conduct themselves, even before they hit a golf shot, you know that guy or girl's going to be, she's going to excel at this shot. You know, by the body language walking in, but you can tell by what they're saying. I mean, it's amazing. I wish I knew more than I know about what's going on in your brain. You know, just how powerful, you know.
How powerful confident self-talk can be.
Yeah. I mean, especially, you guys got to perform in front of big crowds, right? I mean.
Yeah.
When it's the light goes on, there's cameras there. I mean, you guys, it's go time.
Yep.
I mean, and by that time, I mean, if you're not prepared, I mean,
it doesn't go well.
Good luck. Yeah. We've been there a couple times too.
Yeah. The definitely the finding the gap. Not the gap, but finding the rhythm of, like, it's obviously very easy to have that self, that confident self-talk and to be riding that wave when you're performing well, training well, skating well. It's being able to find that when you're not training well the best, to be able to hit that performance level even when you're not training well, or, you know, vice versa, like those sort of things. I think that's the harder part. Like, it's definitely very easy. Yeah, we've been training well all week. This is great. We're awesome. Like, you can definitely see it all. It's just when things are like, you're not guessing, but you're just working harder than you need to be. Then I think that's the part that, like you said, like the elite of the elite do all the time, or at least it looks like they do. Like, even when they're not practicing well and they come in and they lay it down and you're like, how? I was not expecting that. I watched them in practice all week and they were terrible. Yeah. Then they come out and they just the same thing. They still come out with that confidence that they can do it, and it's just an instant thing.
Yeah. Hey, what's your advice to younger athletes? Like, you have to go speak in front of ninth grade kids, you know, that are interested and they're super talented, but they're just like, how do you convince them? Like, it's got to, like, I'm trying to convince my team, if you want to play college golf, it's a lifestyle. Everything you do has to be. And it's scary, right? I mean, those kids, like, I have a kid on my team right now. He can play at any college he wants, but he doesn't understand yet that you got to be all in and take it by the Friday night, Saturday nights. I mean, it's like, what would you go back and tell those ninth grade kids? Like, if you came to talk to my golf team, and, you know.
I don't know. For me, the thing that's always, it's been a constant thing in my life since I was a kid, and it was really enforced more when we worked with our trainer in London, Maria Mountain, and Tyler Doig. But for me, it's just putting in all of the work you have so you have no regrets. It's very much kind of like rides along with what The Rock says is your two-hand philosophy. If I put in the work and I put in all my effort and I don't reach whatever my goal that I had set to, then I'm okay because I have no regrets because I tried and I did it. I don't want to be sitting around in 30 years going, you know, I could have been the best figure skater in the world, but I didn't give it my all. If I'd give it my all, maybe I would have been. But in 30 years, if I put in all my work and I wasn't, I can go, you know, I did what I could and that wasn't meant for me. And then it moves along to something else. But I put that into every aspect of my life. I'll outwork anybody. It's kind of, I have like a mix of The Rock and the Mamba mentality, the Kobe. Like those are my, like what I feed myself personally. Yeah. But and when you're love and when you're, if you're passionate about something and you love it and you, that's what you like to do and want to do. I haven't worked a day in my life. I'm 25 years old. And for the past 7 years since I moved away from home, I haven't worked. Like, yes, I've worked, but I work my butt off every single day and I'm tired and kill my body and my brain, but I haven't worked a day.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I definitely have to, do it for the love of the game and make the decision that that is something that you want to do. Once you make the decision that this is something you're chasing, all those sacrifices just instantly become so much easier. I had a very clear goal and outline when I was in grade 9 or 10. So when I was missing those birthday parties, those Friday, Saturday night high school things, yeah, I had no regrets because I knew what my path was. I knew where I was going. And now all of these experiences that I've had coming off of that, I didn't miss anything on Friday, Saturday night in high school. And it was clear to me then. And it's clear to me now.
Yeah. That's, I'll just, it, yeah, I mean, it's just, I see so many talented college kids, high school kids, they just put their nose down a little bit more. You know, just, yeah. I mean, so much talent and yeah, just, but they can't outwork their old coach. I mean, they're not outworking me. I'm 38 year old. You know,
you can want it. My coach always has a saying, you can want it for somebody. You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink.
Yeah.
They got to want it for themselves. So I don't know. I feel like for most of those people or people that are on the edge of could be that level, it's finding, they just need like one thing that inspires them to go for it. And then as soon as they go for it, they're in, you know what I mean? Personally, but.
Yeah, it's real tough when the coach wants it more than the athlete. Trent and I both do quite a bit of coaching, and it's extremely frustrating when the coach wants it more than the athlete. And it's hard to get that across sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, the worst is when the parent wants more of the kids.
Yeah.
That's our next topic now that obviously you're a high level coach and now you're a father to two very successful athletes in figure skating. We've seen many, many athletes, parents through nothing but positive intentions play a massive, have a negative impact on their child's performance. So now that you've done, have seen both sides, what would your advice be to the parents trying to raise a champion?
If it's not fun, they're not doing it. And I mean, everything's gotta be fun. And I know it's such a cliche, but, and then the next thing is, I mean, the kid always looks at the parent when they make a mistake or when they make a great play, and the parents have to look the same no matter what, you know. And at the end of the day, no matter what, I mean it is brutal. I mean, I can write a book about the stuff I've seen, recruiting, coaching, now caddying for my kids. I mean, it doesn't matter at the end of the day. It's all about experience. And take the kid for an ice cream cone, no matter if they shoot 90 in golf, they win the tournament, who cares? You know, and my whole goal, I tell this to my parents, is, you know, my kids are 6 and 8 and winning golf tournaments and playing high level hockey. And I'm like,
by the time they're 16, 18, I want them to still love me and want to play golf with me. And if they get to be 16 and 18 and they want, if that happens, they're going to be, I'll be either really, really good at golf. But the longer they can have fun and just, like you guys say, figure out how to love it. But I can tell right away who's, I mean, you guys have seen it too. I mean, you guys are around the elite athletes. The quicker the parents get out of the way, the better. Become a bus driver. Like, drive the bus. That's it.
Yeah, it's extremely important for the parent to have the trust in the coach, because as soon as that trust between the parent and the coach is lost, just spirals out of control extremely, extremely quick. And you should find a new situation where you can find a coach that you can trust, because once you can put that trust in the coach, it's much easier for you to step back and play that parent role and let the coach do the coaching.
Yeah, I mean, it's really, I think it's one of the saddest things in junior sports. It's just how the parents get involved, and they're trying, or you said it right, they're trying their best. You know, especially when they're younger, the kids don't understand why they're making mistakes yet. Their brains aren't developed yet to understand the consequences of what this mistake is, right? They're learning on the fly. They're going to make mistakes. I mean, you guys are figure skaters. You're not 10 years old and going to run perfect programs. You're going to wipe out on your butt 3-4 times. I mean, it's just part of the deal. Golf, you're going to three putt. You're going to hit one in the water. I mean, you're going to hit a tree. I mean, you guys aren't trying to fall down. I'm not trying to hit it in the water. It's just, I'm learning by experience, you know, and you don't need to hit one in the water to fall down. You look over and your dad's banging on the boards yelling at you, or my dad's yelling at me because, you know, I hit it in the water. So I'll tell you a little story about, like, I played a ton of golf growing up in Ontario, Michigan, and my dad never watched me play. He would watch me warm up, and they would go read a book in the clubhouse. And at the time, I couldn't understand what he was doing. But now, 38, you know, I'm coaching for 15 years now. Like, I completely get it. I mean, he was giving me my space to let me do what I need to do. And I mean, and now I've become that dad. I'm the dad that's like a cheerleader. I'm the dad at the hockey rink that has a cup of coffee and I stand in the corner and just don't engage anyone. Right? Let them have some fun. And so, and now, you know, now I'm in high school. I had a real powerful high school in Austin, you know, and the parents, I spent more time this year train the parents, you know, stay on the cart path, be a cheerleader. I mean, enjoy this. It goes by too fast. Pretty soon they're not going to want to talk to you because, you know, they're going to be 17 and they don't want to see dad or mom.
Yeah. Be okay with them going, asking if you ask them about how golf was or whatever they're doing, yeah. Be okay with them going good and leaving it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, they'll talk about it when they want to talk about it.
Yep.
You know, I think the other part is, it's like, I see so many dads that, like, they're living through their kid. They're like, oh my God, I never got a chance to play college golf. I mean, here's my shot. And it's like, it's backwards. You know, sure, would I love my kids to play college something? Yeah. You know, will I provide every opportunity I can? But am I going to treat them differently, you know, because it doesn't pan out? No. But I'm probably in the minority down here. You know, everyone's just so hard on their kid. You know, I tell some parents, I'm like, how do you perform at work if your boss is just like over your shoulder analyzing every single thing you do? They're like, well, I would hate that. You know, I don't want to work for a boss like that.
That's what you're doing to your kid right now.
Yeah. I mean, and I'm not smart. I always tell them, like, I'm not the smartest dude in the world, but you're all over your son or daughter. I mean, just cool it. I mean, let him breathe.
Yeah. Let him have fun. That's what I think my favorite thing you said about that is Let them have fun. My mom, every year, still to this day, I'm 25 years old, haven't lived at home in 7 years. Every year after the skating season goes, you having fun? Yep. You love it? Yes. Okay.
Yeah. And if Jesus. You answer no, yeah. If you answer no in one of those, then we're like, hey, how do we?
Yep. We have a conversation then, but you love it? Yeah. Cool. That's it. She's asked me that every day since I started figure skating when I was 11 or 12 years old. But not every day, every year. She's asked me that.
And it's like a roller coaster, right? I mean, there's going to be times where you got to step in and kind of be a little bit more, you know, make sure that there's structure and discipline and all that stuff. But there's more times where you just got to, it's out of your control. Let the coach trust the, it's such a cliche too, it's trust the process. But just, I tell my wife, we just got to be bus drivers. Get them there on time. Make sure they have a Gatorade. Make sure they have a Snickers in their bag and just let them go.
Yep.
You know,
that makes complete sense. So obviously you're a golf coach. Now, have you ever played disc golf?
I have a little bit. It's growing down here in popularity. I mean, it's a blast.
Mike and I are very avid disc golfers.
Yeah.
We play a lot.
As it's you can funny because there's this saw just hanging on my wall.
I stuck there. You look like you played for the Leafs. You're trying to hit the net, but you missed. Yeah.
Unfortunately, yeah. Ended up in figure skating. If I'd stuck in hockey, I could have been playing for the Leafs, and they would have won a cup by now. I'm the problem.
You guys are traveling the world. I mean, is disc golf outside North America, is it popular or is it
super popular in Finland and Sweden, right, Mike?
Yeah, it's 10 times bigger than North America in Eastern European countries and Japan.
I know you don't have much downtime, but I mean, do you ever get out and try and play a little bit?
In the summer, Mike and I were playing 5 days a week.
Well, that's awesome.
That was our post training cool down, was an hour and a half walk in the park chucking discs.
Yeah,
almost every Sunday, Mike and I would play 72 holes.
Yeah,
I mean it's exercise.
Yeah,
I know it's growing down here. Every time I go in to play it against sports, it's just the section of disc golf just keeps getting bigger and bigger. It's not a very big store to begin with, and it's just. And there's so many dudes in there just analyzing all the different weights and just just talking about it. I mean,
yeah, most of the courses are in public parks, but there's like five golf courses in the area that have converted into disc golf for the winter because they play all year round. They play in the snow. So they take the real golf courses and they're setting up disc golf courses throughout the winter to play.
What a great idea to. They charge you at those courses or no?
Most of the golf courses you have to pay, but the like all the public like courses like in the parks and stuff you don't pay for.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's all. Yeah. Is there tournaments up there?
Yeah, a lot of them.
Yeah.
It's like huge in the States. Like it's actually crazy. Like so there's an app. There's the UDisc app. It has every course in the world on it. Really? And like when you like if you were to look up like Michigan in July, there's tournaments almost every day.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it's huge in Michigan. There's like three of the top five courses in the world are in Michigan.
I mean, those guys, they Michigan, they go bowling all winter and they play disc golf all summer.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah, those are all my old college teammates. Yeah. I'm like, what are you doing tonight? We're going bowling. I'm like, okay.
So what I'm thinking is we need to borrow that machine that you're saying for the golf ball with hitting it the face and everything. We need that so we can analyze our shots with our arms.
Yes.
I mean, I'm telling you, I mean, like the 3D stuff, you know, put those little, I wish I knew the name of it. You guys could be rich. Started doing arm angles and release points and, is the disc tilted? The spin on the disc?
I don't know if we're smart enough for it. We need to find people that can make it for us, but we've
got to be the middleman.
Yeah.
We might have just gave away, or so you might have to edit this part out. I mean, yeah. Might have just gave away the secret. But that's awesome.
Yeah, we are both much better at disc golf than we are at real golf. We both struggle a little bit. So what kind of golf tips you got for a recreational player like Trent and myself, a high-performance athlete, can get a little technical? What would you advise us to do on the golf course?
So when you go to any driving range, do the opposite of what they're doing, right? So just think about a driving range, right? I mean, yep. Michael, do the opposite of whatever Rob and Joe would do the opposite.
Like, that's pretty easy for Mike to begin with.
Yeah, right? I mean, this thing, so you go to the driving range, everyone's just standing there just ripping drivers, right? You're going to hit 12 drivers. That's it. Like, no one's practicing chipping. No one's over there in the bunker. No one's working on 3, 4, 5 footers. Like, you only need to hit balls. Just go chip. And you can go to any, I mean, just bring one club, bring your sand wedge and 3 balls and go to any driving range and just spend a half hour chipping. Because chipping works on timing and contact. And you'll figure out where you can get creative with just your sand wedge, right? You'd be like, oh, if I move it here, my stance, it goes up. If I move it here, it goes back down. But it's just the more you can hit the center of the face, the better, right? But no one practices. Just watch. You'll laugh your butt off.
That's my favorite. Opposite. That's my favorite club. It's my sand wedge. So it sounds perfect to me.
Just chip. I mean, chip and putt. Like even in like your room, you know, like I have a whole thing of putters. Like, I mean, right there's all my putters. I just sit here and I practice putting. And all you have to do is get, like, I have just like a regular ruler, 30 centimeters. And you just roll down, put a ball in the end, and try and roll it down a foot on the ruler. Because then you can start the ball. If you can start the ball out on line, it means the putter's aim straight. And it's a lot more challenging than you think. Like, well, why is this guy, he's supposed to be a good coach, he's trying to roll a foot off a ruler? Best tip is roll it a foot off a ruler. But it's just like the little stuff, right? Set up ball position alignment. Like the little stuff that no one works on.
What's a quick little mental checklist to go through as I'm setting up my 5-iron? Three mental checklists to go through as I address the ball.
So when 80% of your focus needs to be on your target, right? And 20% has to be your alignment and where you're like looking at your feet, looking at the ball. 80% has got to be looking where the ball's going. And when you're doing that 80%, you're visualizing what the shot's going to look like. Right. And you watch, like when I'm out there recruiting and even watch the pros, I mean, that as soon as that ratio flips, you know, that you can tell when a guy's struggling on TV this weekend, if you turn on golf, if it's 80% looking at his feet and the ball and only 20% at the target, that guy's not in the right mental frame right now. It's got to be 20% target and 80% target and then 20% you're down getting ready to hit the shot. You know, and that's.
I'm relating a lot of this to disc golf and to figure skating. I can use all this in both of those.
and then it's just golf's such a weird deal. It's everything's the opposite, right? So the harder you try and swing the club, the worse it gets.
Sounds like figure skating.
Yep. Right?
The harder the try, the worse it gets.
Yeah. But the quicker you can turn your body and forget about the club, right? If I turn my chest and shoulders, my arms have to come, right? And my arms are attached to the club. So the club's got to come, right? So if I just focus on turning my shoulders back and turning my shoulders through, the club's got to come. But as soon as you do the opposite, as soon as you start thinking about, I'm going to give this little club a ride and swing as hard as I can. You use way too much arms and not enough body. And it's actually counterintuitive. I mean, you're actually losing spin or you're losing speed because you're using the long levers instead of your, right? Just think about, do the opposite. If you're gearing up for a jump, just picture not using your arms and try and get up in the air. right? Your arm, you're getting ready to spin, and your arms are, you're already tucked in. They're not out.
Yeah.
Right. That's exactly what's going on in the golf. You know, if you're focused on turning your body, things will be fine.
Good. Noted. Thank you.
But more is all visualization stuff.
Yep.
You know, and if you don't play a ton of golf, it's how do you train your brain that I can swing at 60, 70%? It's going to go farther if I focus on hitting the middle of the club rather than swinging at 100%. But it's just so that ball sitting there on the tee, you're like, I just want to smack this so far. And yep. and that never happens. I mean, think about disco. You go and try and just give it a little bit extra on that throw, you lose accuracy.
Yeah, it's the same thing you were saying. Just work on using your putter or your chipping wedge when you're throwing, and because that's literally the same thing with disc golf. You just work on that. It's a straight disc, and you find out what you're throwing funny and how you're throwing funny and why it's going left every single time. It's great.
Yeah. And it's hard to keep things simple at a high level, but the very successful athletes at high levels, they do a really good job of keeping it simple. You know, don't overthink it. Yeah.
Maybe next year I'm going to be on the golf green, Trent. I was unsuccessful this year, but I hope next year I'm going to take you.
We'll see, buddy. We'll see.
Yeah.
So, Chris, do you have any, we have an Ice Lab book club. Do you have any book recommendations for our listeners? Any young up and coming athletes or parents or anything you can recommend?
Yeah, I'm reading a good one right there. I just finished it. Oh, it's right here. I just finished it. So this is a great one. This is What to Say. So it's What to Say by Shad Helmsetter. And it's called What to Say, Powerful Techniques to Program Your Potential for Success When You Talk to Yourself.
Great.
It's an awesome book. I'm reading another one right now. I just started last night called The Twin Thieves. This is more coaching. Twin Thieves is about building leaders and culture. But this one right here is What to Say When You Talk to Yourself. It's like kind of like my Bible, especially when I kind of have a bad day or whatever. But, you know, you go back and it's what we talked about. How powerful self-talk is. Well, you give me a, I need a book. What do you guys read?
My go-to one is The Saint, the Surfer, and the CEO by Robin Sharma. I read it once a year, and it's cool for me because Maria Mountain recommended this to me to read it once a year as well, and every time I read it I reconcile with a different part of the book.
I'm writing this down.
And for me, I would say Tools of Titans by Tim Ferriss. It's like 100 high performance athletes, actors, billionaires, businessmen giving a 1 to 2 page little tip summary of something they do that helps them be successful, all put together in a pretty sweet book.
Trent, what was yours called?
The Saint, the Surfer, and the CEO.
I'm a big reader. But I don't read a lot of golf books. I love reading and hearing what other athletes are thinking or doing.
I think that's the coolest thing in the world. I coach figure skating right now, obviously, and that's what I want to do when I'm done. But I also am super intrigued in what other athletes do in different sports for every aspect, their training aspect, their mental aspect. So I want to get my strength and conditioning certification so I can work with all athletes in general, because I find that stuff super, super cool, how things are similar and how things are different. Like when we just talked about things you're talking about that I can relate to in skating, but it's still so different because it's completely different motion of the body and with golf than it is skating.
Yeah. Probably one of the coolest things I did was Titleist has a thing called Titleist Performance Institute. And it's all rotational, development, right? I mean, you're basically training to be a pitcher in you know, how do you train, how do pitchers train, you know? And there's a guy, Dr. Tom House, is a guy that you probably need to look up if you want to get into stuff. And he's a guy out of UCLA, or it was USC, and he's a guy that every MLB pitcher goes to work on rotational speed. And I mean, he's the guy down here in the United States. So Dr. Tom House.
Cool.
Anything you read by that dude, it'll help you.
Dude, I'll look it up. Thank you.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Well, we're going to, anything else you want to add here before we finish with some fun, light, rapid fire questions?
No. I mean, you guys are the guys that cover kind of what you.
It's awesome.
It was excellent for us. It was extremely, extremely nice to not talk about figure skating for the hour. We're going to have to repeat this and get some more non-figure skating guests on because it was quite refreshing.
Yeah, it was awesome.
And for me, it's nice to have non-golf hosts asking questions because I can kind of float around a little bit, right? And
yeah,
if a golf host asks me about the flight scope or, you know, it's like, hey, can we go over all 26 different factors of the ball? I've been fortunate. I've done quite a bit of this stuff, and I'm like, no, I'm not sure if I want to go over 26 different factors right now.
Not feeling it.
No.
Awesome. All right. So we're going to get this started then. So just light and quick, whatever comes to your mind. So first off, what is the one thing that you always have in your fridge?
I want to say beer, but my mom's going to listen. No, I always have sparkling water.
Okay, beer and sparkling water.
Nice. Yeah. Who is your favorite sports team?
New York Yankees.
Nice.
By far, not even a close second.
I was really hoping you weren't going to say the Red Wings.
No, I'm glad you didn't. I know. Yeah, I think I probably watched 140 Yankee games at some part this year. Wow. My dad's. Big Yankees guy, and that's how it all started.
It's awesome. What do you love about Sabo Beach?
It's just my heaven. I love everything. That's my getaway. I haven't been there 2 years.
I was there in August for the first time. My whole family was up there. It was amazing. We had a fun time staying at your place. Thank you for that.
It's a neat little spot. You know how my dad's struggling to get around. I mean, it's a neat spot, all one story.
Yeah, we had a good time.
We've done a lot of work to fix that thing up. I mean,
it's beautiful, beautiful property.
Yeah.
We had a blast. Living in Texas, do you miss the winters in Canada?
It was 65 degrees today, and I got that on. No. I wore pants and a sweatshirt and it's 65 degrees today. I mean, no, I don't. I have no problem running my air conditioner 300 days a year.
No. We got some snow today. No, it didn't stick, but it was snowing here in Brantford. So
It's gonna be no. I need to play golf. I mean, that's my yeah. No.
We'll be dedicated disc golfers playing in the snow, walking around playing in the snow.
Like I don't like now I'm a dad. Like I don't know how I understand Michael when you're growing up, why your dad and mom would just throw us in the basement. Like, I mean, I don't know how to raise kids when they have to stay inside all the time. Like mine are outside running around. I mean, burning energy. I understand why. I mean, I spent hours in Michael's basement,
many sticks,
and just watching. And so one brother is a year older, one's a year younger, and I was the middle one, and just watching the Marinero boys some unbelievable fights. I would just sit there and watch. I mean, it was unreal. Like like if those walls could talk down there.
Yes.
I mean, oh my God, just watching. And it was the best was when Joe got just big enough where he could beat up Rob. Right? Because, I mean, Joe's a great athlete, right? I mean, Joe was that kid that was good at whatever he did. But he got strong in high school.
Yeah.
And Rob got fat in high school.
Yes. Yes, he did.
I hope they both listened to this part of the episode.
That's fine. I mean, that's what right when the transition shift, when Rob got fat and Joe got strong, was when the fights really like. And then you guys got the pool, and then the fights would start in the basement. And then next thing you know, we were too loud. Next thing you know, they're just beating the crap out of each other. You know, and then they would go over. Rob would go over and take all the day old donuts at Tim Hortons. This is unbelievable. I mean, then they would start like having a snowball fight with day old donuts. And I'm just sitting there. I'm like, oh my God. And like, And
those probably would have been pretty hard too after a day, right?
Oh, and the ones at the bottom were, the ones deep were not a day old. They were like rocks.
They no longer put the old donuts in the dumpsters behind the Tim Hortons behind my house.
And you had the one neighbor that was not a fan of us. I don't know what that lady's name was. But her yard be full of donuts.
That's but, awesome.
Oh, yeah. That's gold.
We still got a couple more. Who was the best? Sorry, what was the best live sporting event you've ever been to?
Oh boy. So, I've been very, very lucky. I mean, I've been to the World Series 3 times. Probably the Ryder Cup at Oakland Hills on Sunday was a really cool one. I've been to the Masters.
That would be unreal.
I've been to the Masters 7 times. God, I mean, that's hard. I've been to the Stanley Cup Finals.
Never mind. I didn't. Then that takes the cake.
I would say. I mean, you guys can all. I'd probably say the best sporting event I've been to is the Ryder Cup at Oakland Hills, or Augusta. I mean, as a golfer, I got Augusta. Hearing the roars at Amen Corner at Augusta was pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's a good question.
Yeah, I knew you had a couple of really good ones, but I didn't know it was the list was that long.
Boy, I'm still thinking about that one. Because I've been in the NBA Finals when, you know, I went to school in Detroit when every Detroit team was good, right? 2002, except for the Lions. 2002 through 2007, the Pistons won, and then the Wings won. Ryder Cup was there. Who else am I missing? What other big sporting?
The Tigers. There?
Tigers were making a run with Verlander and Scherzer when they were young.
Were you there the night of the Malice at the Palace?
No, no. But when the Pistons won the first cup, we set a couch on fire on Wayne State's campus.
Nice.
Yeah. And I almost got arrested for climbing a pole, like a lamp pole, when the thing was on fire, waving my Rasheed Wallace jersey around. luckily it was all the athletes in our campus. Police came by and just said, hey, I mean, knock it
that's
off.
That's enough. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. But, who makes the best stuffed peppers in the world?
Stuffed peppers? Boy, I haven't had a stuffed pepper in years.
Your mother. The answer is your mother. For the best stuffed peppers.
I was just thinking. I'm like, when was the last time I had a stuffed pepper? Yeah. Yeah, mom. She makes about 3 things over and over.
Extremely well.
Yeah.
Who is your favorite athlete?
Tiger Woods. Tiger Woods.
Can't argue that.
No, you know, Tiger Woods. Yeah, I mean, Mike Weir. I mean, what Mike Weir did was unreal, too. I mean, undersized, went to BYU, kind of not heavily recruited. Right. I mean, and he's the neat part is he's kind of rebuilt his golf game. And he's back out there on the Champions Tour and he's doing great. You know,
Canadian
boy playing, you know, a Southern sport, and he excelled, you know.
So. And into the last one, then, who is your favorite golfer for swing technique?
For swing technique, I mean, Tiger in his prime, you know, but I watch Adam Scott. Yeah, I think Adam Scott's swing is fundamentally, you know, sound, you know, and I think putting right now is Patrick Cantlay. I mean, if you want to watch a putting stroke, that I think it's just, you know, but Tiger in his prime was very, very special.
Awesome. Well, you know, thank you very much for jumping on the podcast with us today, Chris. Thank you. Like Mike said, really nice to talk about something other than figure skating. And, you know, we've really enjoyed this. It's been a really fun hour for us.
Good. Well, I appreciate it. I'm big fans. I'm cheering for you guys. You know, it's neat for me to be on a podcast with Hyatt, you know, very elite athletes.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much taking an hour out of your day. I know you're busy. Kids running around, family. Thank you. Thank you very much for spending this hour with us.
Yep, no problem.
Ice Labbers, get to work in your labs and...
peace and love and be kind to one another.
This episode of the Ice Lab Podcast was produced by Trent Michaud and Michael Marinaro.
Music produced by Hugo Schwinard.
If you haven't already, share with your friends and leave a review.
Follow us on Instagram @IceLabPodcast for more information and to stay up to date.